job to do, and he's gone about doing his job the best way he can, and I think he's done a good job. But the only problem I did have with it was that when the governor first introduced him, he would often refer to him as James by his first name. And things like this, you know, when guys tell you racism ain't still a factor, well, you know, things like this will tell me it is. See, I'm talking about things is a hell of a lot better, but I'm talking about total manhood and total respect for a person I don't care what color he is.
You normally refer to by your first name, by the legislators?
We usually refer to each other like that. Sometimes I'm referred to as Robert, sometimes Representative Clark. And we often refer to each other as, for example, Speaker Pro Tem. We just call him Buddy. No, nobody gonna call Johnny, Mr. Junkins, Johnny, but less than some of the older fellows on his level. And Mayor and Gerald Blessing, we among ourselves just call him Gerald, no representative. And I have no problem with that, you know. I do, you know, get the respect of him.
But you address them the same way they address you, basically.
The same way they address me.
Or at least the same way other legislators address them.
That's right. For example, one fellow, the Representative Carol Kennedy, kind of an old fellow. I understand he's a millionaire. so I'm told from over here in the Rankers County, kind of old fellow. Well, most everybody calls him Mr. Carol. And, you know, I just refer to him as what everybody else refers to him. See, but under normal conditions, in the black community, when you refer to a white person by his or her first name, that's your antonism, you know. But I have no problem with referring to Representative Kennedy as Mr. Carroll, because that's where everybody is calling. But under normal conditions, I couldn't do it, you know.
How do you assess the effect of Charles Efford's campaign for governor? We've had some people tell us that it took a lot of support and effort away from other black candidates and therefore hurt the total black effort in electing officials. The other version is that it had the effect of generating a great deal of interest in the black community and coming out to vote.
I hate to assess that because I think the value is two forces that's going to wind up being equal. And it's not going to be negative or positive. Charles ran a damn good campaign, hell of a good campaign. He generated a hell of a lot of interest in the black community, but you can rest assured he tore the white community up. He had every white sister and his brother coming to the polls to vote. And when he generated interest in the black community, likewise, he generated interest in the white community, which caused, you know, the turnout in the white community to be heavier than it normally would have been, and therefore it balanced itself off. I'm not going to say Elvis's campaign hurt the black community because the strategy at that time that everybody accepted, I did not object to it, but I went on to run my own campaign, was that, you know, Charles is going to be running for governor, and he's going to turn all the black folk out and children this town and that town. All right, we did turn out a record number of black folk, but in so turned out a record number of black folk, those black folk did not vote for those local black candidates. Now, I've heard people, you know, tell me, say, well now, I wouldn't mind voting for black if I could vote for you or Elvis or somebody like that. Well, that's after Elvis has been on television since 6 o'clock news. Elvis come through beautiful on television, come through beautiful. And then here you go in at 8 o'clock, you go out to your local meeting. Then you got a candidate standing up there, doesn't know what to do, and black keys are insecure and what have you. And then by Elvis coming through so good on television, and then that really kind of turns many local blacks off from their candidates.
Going back to the original thing you said, you'd rather have a poor white than a black that felt wouldn't do a good job.
That's right.
I have always, now, I didn't object to Evans' campaign running for governor. I support him 200%. And I hope he runs again. But
would you like to see him run again in a Democratic primary or general election?
Black community need to just get one election, and that's it. These two double barrel elections is too tough, you know, to get folks to come back a second time. They go vote one time, and that's got to eventually be done, but you got to have resources to do it. But if it had to be done again, I'd rather see more work done on the grassroots level. I'd like to see more of Mr. Evers' staff and the resources that he has be put, you know, out into the boondocks and deal with organizing on the local level.
Another thing.
And cut and maybe about one-fourth, and do about one-fourth of the work that was done on the state level. Let that still be done. And three-fourths of the time that was put on the state level, put that into individual community organizing. Now, for example, they gave me several kids came here with the Evers campaign, and they gave them to me. And I had them working out in the fields and Krugering, isoling, midnight, and what have you, acres curve. Hell, they didn't want that, you know. They wanted to be sitting up somewhere in the air conditioned office, you know, and going to news conferences and being seen on television and all like that. They didn't want to get out there and hit that date and that hot sun, you see. Organize, and that's what it takes. And if Mr. Evers runs for governor again, and I hope he does, I hope lots of the interest from his campaign will be focused in that direction on the ground as well. Rather than coming from up, down, I'd rather for it be coming
but
from down, up.
You want to run again as an independent candidate in the general election?
If he runs again, though, it is my understanding, he hasn't told me, but it's my feeling that he will run in a Democratic primary where he will have lots of folk in there. But black folk can't be running the Republicans or Democrats or nothing. They're just going to have to run to win. And I'm associated with the Democratic Party. I'm chairman of the Loyal Democrats in Holmes County. I'm chairman of the Regular Democrats in Holmes County, both Democratic parties. But some of the Republicans in Holmes County are some of my best friends and supporters. And I run as an independent. If I run again, I run as an independent.
Rather than in the Democratic primary?
Yes, sir. I can't gain nothing by running the Democratic primary. We don't have a party in Mississippi, really, we don't. I don't know what others will tell you, but I know much about the state Senate, but we don't have a party in Mississippi. If you believe it, you go out there and declare yourself a Republican or declare yourself a Democrat. And see what kind of machine, part of machine you're going to have to come support you. You ain't going to have one. You're going to have to get your support from where you can.
But last time you ran as a Democrat?
No, no, sir.
You ran as an independent?
Independent.
You always have run as an independent?
Always run as an independent.
That's interesting. He's the chairman of both Democratic parties and runs as an independent.
That's right. Because I don't really believe there ain't no parties. Parties is just the main moment in the state.
Are you the only person in Mississippi who holds that sort of dual position of being, having a foot in both Democratic parties, at least as they exist, both the regulars and the loyalists?
There might be some people in Washington County, up in Hardin County's hometown, Wes Watkins, etc. Wes might be in a similar position, but I don't think he holds positions.
Are you the only independent candidate in the legislature or office holder?
Yes, I am.
What do you think is going to happen on this loyalist-regular split? Are they going to come together before 1976?
I don't see it.
Where do you think's the stumbling? Where's the stumbling block?
Nobody wants to give. First of all, the governor who has done more for blacks, not me enough, though, to also putting them on boards and et cetera. Politically, the governor has played his cards very poorly. See, when they first started talking about getting together, the first thing he said Charles Evers is talking and he doesn't represent nobody but himself. And he began to lambast all of the people at the head of the Loyalist Party and created hostility. And you cannot negotiate when you have created hostility. due to the fact that them artists have a call to the convention. That's the only thing that they have. And the governor of this state is going to have to be willing to give something. The lawyers have the call, and they're just not going to go and say, here, Mr. Governor, we're going to hand you the call, and now you deal with us and select the ones of us that you want. Now, the governor's going to have to give, and the lawyers going to have to give. For example, if the lawyers, emerge with the regulars, Mr. Evers, Ms. Darian, Mr. Henry, Mr. Carter, Mr. Wes Watkin, Mr. Charles Young, it's going to be impossible for all the people at the top of the party to hold the same or similar position that they have now, unless they get co-positions, you see. And somebody's going to have to give something up. And I'm hoping that we could get one Democratic party, just for the sake of unity, but so far as Mississippi's concerned, it really wouldn't help the everyday man in Mississippi. Because if we did have one party, it simply means that these individuals, they're going to still support the person that they want to support when it comes down to an election. May he be independent, a Republican, or what have you. But by him having that party label behind him, is not going to affect one thing when it comes to the political arena.
Well, would it affect it to the extent that blacks who are now affiliated with the loyalists, in a merged party, they would then have greater influence with the internal political structure of the state?
I don't see it unless Gantees was built in. Now, this has been some of the conflicts in the past. When I was active at one time in the negotiation of the merger, but if blacks don't have built-in guarantees of leadership, they won't be there. It simply means they cannot have any input into the internal operations because they won't be there. You'll either have
Who can bring this together? Why should either faction want to bring it together?
Why should either want to bring it together?
Yeah.
Well, you got your political patronage that normally comes from the National Democratic Party. And I would assume that the state as a whole is suffering because many of it, I would assume some of the patronage that's supposed to come in, nobody's getting it. And the governor definitely would like to say when they go to Mississippi, to the Democratic Convention, you know, he's sitting up back here saying, I'm a Democrat, and I'm the governor of the state, and still I can't even be there and have a say so nothing about what's going on in my state. And I can see why he would want to come here. But the lawless really don't have a reason to want to come in other than just to try to satisfy the National Democratic Party. When Robert Strauss sent down something, and all the lawless got to do is worry about satisfying the mandates of the National Democratic Party. You know, you have an open meeting and put on the radio, put in the newspaper. You know why it's not coming. Eventually, though, if I was there, I might come and take it over. They could. But they're not coming. Then you get these clippings and these radio announcements and bills for radio announcements and send it back to Robert Strauss. And he said, yes, the Democratic Party of Mississippi is open. But the other folks just refused to participate. Then the lawless still got the call. See? And that's all they got. They don't have nothing to gain by a merger. The government of the state is the only one that has anything to gain.
You mean this governor or the next governor?
Well, the next governor, incoming governor, whomsoever the governor is.
Who do you think it's going to be?
It's up for grabs. Inasmuch as this book will not be published until when? 76?
76.
What time is 76?
Spring.
That's all right. 75 is gubernatorial year. William Winter should be the next governor of the state of Mississippi. He's a man that could do a hell of a lot for the state. He's open-minded. He's very fluent. But due to the fact that
You know, he is a country boy, country Mississippi boy, just like all the rest of them. But he does not come through like a Mississippi boy. And his appearance, his talk, and he doesn't have the crutches and the rah and what have you. And this is what he'll have to overcome.
Would he have black support?
I would assume he would. He had black support when he ran against John Bell. However, they didn't have no alternative at that time. And I don't see anyone, you know, coming up now that would take, that could take, you know, blacks would rally behind.
I suppose Evers runs.
No, that would be a different case, different situation if Evers does run. No, some blacks ain't gonna vote for Evers because they feel Evers shouldn't be out there. They feel that we should put our eggs in a basket behind a man that we can elect, you know, get one of the whites. However, I don't share that. If a black can run and make an impression, let him run. And let us get the best man we possibly can. Now, William Winters, you know, he really should be the next governor of the state. It's a possibility Brad Dye might be the dark horse. I don't know how hard he's going to push for it, but Brad Dye definitely could make a run for governor and would be a serious candidate. And he might be a compromise candidate between the forces behind Jim Buck Ross. In my estimation of knowing state politics as I do, I feel he's a definite candidate for governor. A.F. Summer is a definite candidate for governor. And either one of those men could make a hell of a run for governor. It all depends up on the back and the support that they get. You know, A.F. Summer's Attorney General. And I could see either one of those men, either one of those three, being a compromise candidate between, you know, from the William Winters forces and that, you know, they could get together, put their force together, and could knock one out. But it's a tragic thing to have a man, you know, like him. And just have this little, some insignificant things that, you know, seem to be a barrier, maybe stand in his way. This little insignificant things.
What are the sort of things that would stand in his way?
Well, just the image he has, you know. We're still Mississippi, you know, and the image that he has. He just doesn't have the image of a Mississippi yet.
You mean insofar as appealing to white voters?
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, if Evers were to run, though, wouldn't that almost, wouldn't that be a serious blow to any chance Winter has?
Not necessarily, because William, when he ran against John Bell in 68, he got a hell of a lot of white votes, you know, got a hell of a lot of white votes. Now, the white folk of this state, I've moved around over this state, they want William Winter for governor. And it's a lot can transpire between now and then. But if they decide to forget about that image, I don't care who won, he's going to beat anybody. If he can just overcome that barrier. And I don't know if he's trying or what, you know. But I'm sure him being a politician, I'm pretty sure he's aware of it. Because I hear things, you know, from time to time, day to day, and I'm sure he has plans that I'm sure he's putting out feelers and they're going back telling me.
But you were saying before that in a legislative district, where earlier you said that in a county in which blacks were a minority, that they should get together and block vote for the best of the white candidates so they could have some input and influence later.
That's right.
But you seem to be saying something different insofar as the governor's race is concerned.
In what respect?
Well, that here you're saying, you know, you'd still like to see Evers in there, even though he would end up having a minority vote that he couldn't win, rather than having a block vote behind one of the
better
of the white candidates for governor.
All right, now I was talking about in an area, minority area where your blacks are minority. Whereas if you don't have a black in the race, now, we used to get out there and run just for the sake of running. we had to prove to other folks that a black could run and wouldn't get hung up by his neck. Well, you get out there and run. But we've reached the point now where when we run, we are running to win or running for something else. And Mr. Evers, if the political situation at that time is right so that Charles can run, not just to say Charles Evers running for governor, but if the black community can benefit by it, certainly he should run.
Okay, so they could benefit how? By one, him generating interest in people coming out to vote?
Well, this time around,
and two, in raising issues?
Those are great. That's great, those two things that you mentioned. But I would say more for raising resources and getting help to go into the communities to work on grassroots level. See, in other words, a lot of things that I would get done if I was running for governor and had the resources he had would be off the television, and it would be somewhere out in the community in the boondocks organizing, and you'd have the resources to do it.
What's the political effect of Channel 3 in Jackson?
What do you mean by that? Is it
well, the fact that the group that now controls that station does control it, mm-hmm. and they have it's not a black oriented station, but it's a community wide oriented station.
Well,
and certainly has a lot of programs that would not be on before, and a lot of faces that would not be on before.
Right. Well, I say it's a, you know, it's more or less of a community station, and you know, where everybody seems to get an opportunity, you know, black as well as white, and all kinds of programs get an opportunity to come on air.
But do you think that has any effect insofar as political moderation is concerned?
I mean, I'm sure it does. I couldn't, you know, speak directly to the effect that it has had now this soon, but I'm sure it has. Maybe you could elaborate further on it. Now, so far as the group controlling it, if you didn't know, you'd never know that Ken Dean and et cetera has the station. Other than that, you know, you see a lot of blacks on as newscasters and what have you. And you see blacks get an opportunity to be on program with various programs. And when this occurred, this has put pressure, I would assume, on Channel 12. 16, you see more than that. But if you move in other areas of the state, you don't see as much of that.
But what effect do you think it has in the Jackson area? And so, because the fact that here our blacks are on, and there are programs, and this is a station that is received in the white community as well. It's not a black-oriented station. But what do you think, what effect does it have in the white community?
Well, it definitely it will soften up the white community some and prove that blacks can do a job. And it will make more of the acceptance of blacks than before.
If single-member districts are ordered before the 75 election in these urban counties, do you think that will result in more blacks in the legislature?
It will result in about five blacks in Hinds County. So you don't have about two counties under that, which I opposed to that stronger than hell. I worked along with the civil rights attorneys, and I came here and I fought for single member districts. And I had many of my colleagues said, "Bob, what the hell are you fighting for?" I said, "We ain't bothering your district." And I said, "Well, I'm gonna be a statesman. I'm for the whole state." I introduced some plans and started at the northeastern section of the corner and came diagonal all the way across to the southwestern corner with single-member districts. And after the legislature was out of session, when I heard on news media where the civil rights attorneys had gotten together along with the judge and dealt for two of the urban counties and said to hell with the rest of you. And I was very disturbed, because now if this is what we was going to do, we was going to play ball games,
maybe I wouldn't have had a double county district today. See, I had to face Holmes County, Holmes and Yazoo, where I had to run on from Holmes County. And they didn't bother my district, but it was sent to the federal court, Fifth Circuit Court in New Orleans, where Judge Coleman sits on the bench for the governor. Then at that time, that's when they hooked Humphreys County onto Holmes, which definitely made it more difficult. Now, if I was going to play games and trade off, I would have set my butt down up there those 2 or 3 years I was up there fighting, and I would have dealt with those folks for my county. And I feel in such dealing with them for my county, I could have still, I believe, been protected, even in the federal courts, just like I was protected here. So due to the fact that I was going to the bat, and then when they came up, they'd do a damn thing for the Delta, I'm very pissed off at it. And frankly speaking, if same thing would occur again from the action that they have taken, I don't know if I would get up and fight like hell 2 or 3 years, you know, for the plan, statewide plan. And if any dealing's going to be done, since I'm in a part of it, they'll let me do the dealing.
And who are the lawyers handling that?
Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. It is the group that Tex Wilson heads. But the gentleman that was there before Tex was the guy that held that. Frank Park is there now. He's the senior attorney on the staff. He's not the head man. I can't think of the man that was there before.
Wasn't Armin Durfner?
No, wasn't Armin. No.
But they went to the Fifth Circuit and in effect negotiated this plan?
No, the plan that they have coming up now, I don't know what code it's in, the plan that they have pending. But you see what the legislature passed we passed a law, redistricting law. And my county was left alone, just as it was. But the Fifth Circuit didn't approve of that plan. They threw it out. All right, they threw it out and instituted their own plan. Then they throw it out and instituted their own plan. Then this civil rights group, lawyers group, went into court, some courts, and their trade-off was, we're going to deal with two counties. Now, I can see them being very partial and very damn partial because they're located in Jackson. They know damn well they ain't going to get no black elected down on the Gulf Coast, but they said the two populous counties in the state and, the two urban counties. That's Hinds County and Harrison or Jackson, whichever one it is. And they put those two counties together solely because they could get fired for Jackson. You know, I got no gripes with Hinds County. Some of my best friends live here. All possibility, Benny Thompson, Mayor Bolton, will be elected. All possibility, Al Rhodes, good friend of mine, who's state director Starr, will be elected. These are my buddies. I ain't got nothing against them. But why in the hell trade us off? You know, use us as a pawn up there in the Delta, where we have black majorities.
In other words, you felt if they had state, if they had single member districts statewide, you could elect a lot more blacks.
A hell of a lot more blacks. That's right. And their rationale to me was, well, Bob, we can't get a statewide. Let's go for what we can. Well, you know, if any damn compromise was going to do, why in the hell you didn't at least let me be in on the plane? Since I had carried the ballot for 3 years and we had worked side by side, and I carried the ballot for 3 years in the legislature. Then you get ready to make a plan, a change, why not let me be in on it? Or since I'm up there fighting, and this is a part of my everyday profession, let me have something to say about what we're going to change on and ask for.
Do you think that it'll take the rise of the Republican Party into being a real threat to force the Democrats into a solution on the loyalist regular split?
It won't have effect one way or the other. Because I don't care, just like I told you. You don't seem to believe ain't no party in Mississippi. Because when we didn't have the loyalists, what a thing could have the loyalists in the same election, maybe two Republicans and so far as Mississippi is concerned, and the rest of Democrats were elected. Look at 1965, Barry Goldwater.
Republicans always have candidates.
My question, though, is that if the Republicans develop a party of their own, isn't that going to force the Democrats to develop one? And to develop one, they have to resolve that conflict.
No, because the Republicans are not going to develop a type of party that can threaten the Democrats. Because the Republicans and the Democrats are one and the same. A guy might run as a Republican this time, or might support a Republican this time. But the next time around, he ain't no party large doesn't stand for anything he was said. You know, that might seem very strange to you from, you know, coming from North Carolina, wherever you're from. But it doesn't stand for anything in Mississippi. There is no party lord in Mississippi. And Trent Lott was elected from the Gulf Coast. Thad Cochran was elected from here to Congress last time around. They weren't elected because they were Republicans. They were elected just because, you know, people rallied behind them. Not. And you take Trent Lott. Was elected off William Coleman's machine. He was a former aide of William Coleman, you know, who was a Democrat.
Let me ask you your opinion about the Cochran's race. If McBride had not been in that race, where do you think his votes would have gone?
To Cochran. If he had not been in the race, his vote would have gone to Cochran. He didn't beat Beauchamp as many would feel. The type of votes that Matt McBride got would not have gone to Beauchamp. They would have gone to Cochran or Walter Brown. And Walter Brown was out of the race, so would have gone to Thad. Perhaps you have heard that maybe he beat Beauchamp.
I heard some people say that. I questioned it, frankly, but I'm not close enough to tell, but I think you are, and that's why I wanted to know.
Well, I was active in the campaign, frankly speaking, I was.
I mean, it was our view that these were people who were basically sophisticated voters because they were ticket splitting.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were showing political sophistication, and because of Beaudron's image and record,
mm-hmm.
that Cochran was at least making some overtures for black support. That they likely would have at least split,
mm-hmm.
and quite possibly majority more than split, more going to Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, am I correct on that
assessment?
Right.
That's right. I don't think it would have been an even split. Beaudron might have gotten a few of the votes by saying I went out to polls, or well, hell, I don't care, I'm going to vote for him because he's blind. But I would have liked to have seen Beaudron get elected. Because on human issues, welfare issues, Beaudron, as you know, served as chairman of the Finance Committee in the Senate. And across the years, what I found out, which I didn't know, is that if we got anything out of the House, you know, well, I mean, it was passed down pretty damn thin when it got to the Senate, that we wouldn't have to worry about Beaudron on those particular issues. And I learned respect him for that. You know, like on welfare issues, welfare appropriations that we could get out of the House if once it got in Beaudron's committee, I didn't have to worry about it. See, my major concern, that's been one of the major concerns since I've been here, you know, education and welfare. And
that being the case, then, why was there so much opposition to Beaudron?
As you will know, every member of the Mississippi legislature that ran for Congress had his butt beat. The opposition to him was that he's a part of the old power structure, and that's it. And definitely, Beaudron never had, before this election, made an overture for the black community and the black voters, you know. And that's why there was opposition.
Did that same feeling prevail in Trent Lott's race?
Well, in Trent Lott's race, very much the same thing. Now, you had to...
I mean, is that the explanation of Trent Lott getting what black votes he got?
Well, yes, it did.
And he got a fair amount, am I correct?
Yes, it did. However, I wasn't as close to that campaign as I was the one here in Jackson, but I never understood why the senator, what was the senator's name?
Stone, I think.
Stone. They knew better than the black community did. I never understood that. I don't know if
if Carmel didn't have his fingers on some of the key blacks down there who turned the people towards Trenton or not. But Stone should have done better in the black community, and he has. He has the record, you know, and the personality, and a record to stand on. You know, two will have done good in the black community. But maybe it's because he was a part of this body. And I definitely expected for him to, you know, be elected.
This is a delicate question, but how much of an effect can money play in swinging black votes in Mississippi?
If money is used correctly, it could perhaps swing the black vote. But when I say money used correctly, it means that black candidate is going to have to get out there. That white candidate is going to have to get out there and sell himself to the blacks. There's no such thing in Mississippi, nowhere that I know, where a black will come and stand up and say, now, this is the man we're going to support, and let's support Mr. So-and-so because he's a good man. When one black come and stand up and do that for a white, that's a kiss of death in the black community. The black community that's smart enough to know that that's somebody can get that man a payoff, and that man getting a vote for it, you know, going to the bat for it. But now, if that black man comes in a different manner and simply say, you know, this is a person that have asked for our support, and I've checked his record, his record looks good to me, and we're going to turn him loose on y'all, or turn y'all loose on him, and let y'all decide what you want to do. And if that man proves out, then, you know, blacks are both fine. But now, I don't call that money swinging votes. I call that's the individual swinging the votes rather than the money. But now, it might take some money for the white candidate to contact key people to get a chance for him to prove himself to the people. But there's one thing I gotta say, the black vote in Mississippi is very intelligent. I mean, I'm crazy as hell about the black vote in Mississippi. They're very intelligent. And like I was telling you about, well, some blacks they won't vote for, I use that term and said they are too intelligent sometimes with the vote. When they get so intelligent that I say the blacks, they won't support them.
All right, there's a southern state that I won't name, but it's a fairly, but I know it fairly well, and know the black political leadership fairly well. And in certain areas of the state, there are two things. One, a certain amount of money passes hands for very legitimate purposes, hiring carpools, paying gas, hiring drivers, to get people out to the polls. Is that done in Mississippi to a large extent by white candidates?
It is done. I would say to a large extent, but it's done more or less on local levels. It's not done on a district-wide basis or a statewide basis, but this is done more or less on a local level after a candidate will have sold himself. But if a candidate have not sold himself, that's money wasted. You know, he'll probably turn those people out.
So he's got to sell himself not only just to the leadership in that community, he's got to go beyond the leadership. He's got to come personally.
He got to go through the leadership. It's all right. Go through the leadership. But he got to go personally to the community.
But the leadership can't deliver.
The leadership cannot deliver.
Is that true statewide?
Well, that's true statewide, so far as I know. And I know the state very well. The only place that I might would hesitate to say I'm not sure of would probably be on the Gulf Coast. I'm not sure what Gil Mason and some of the others can do down there at this time per se. But the white candidate got to come directly to the people, you know. I have seen it. I've been involved in campaigns. I get a chance to, you know, meet all kinds of white folks here, all kinds of, you know, supervisors, JPs and judges and everything else.
And I hear some almost daily or nightly out at social parties gathering and think, this is where I'd be getting my education as to how certain individuals went into ex-community and went to the leaders and paid them off and thought they was going to deliver. And maybe he got his butt beat. Then I hear others talking about, well, they went into a community and they went out in the country and got with the people. And such a candidate goes down the city and paid the big folk off, and they won, and, you know, the other lost. We're talking strictly about the black folk. And I was in a meeting this week, you know, at one of my fellow colleagues' apartment where we had quite a few guests there. And this thing, this very question was asked, you know. And I told them, no. I said, nobody got the black vote in their hip pocket. When you give $100 bill, they deliver you so many votes. I said, you expecting to get elected like that, you better get your butt beat. You know, want to, if you're looking for the black vote to put you in. Then when I said that, then there was others around. It was 15 or 20 percent I was on the black one. Then there was other whites around that cited two or three examples. And it supported, well, basically what I had said. See, and this, you know, didn't teach me anything I didn't know, but this simply reinforced the thinking, you know, the pattern of my thinking already.
Well, it's expected that white candidates, though, who do, after they sell themselves as candidates, is it more or less accepted or expected that they will help finance their campaign in the black community in terms of money for gasoline, this sort of thing?
Yes, sir. And if a white candidate campaigns against a black candidate on a local level and he's fairly popular, this is what gives the black candidate, you know, a little bit of a rough time, because the white comes in, gives $20 to the church. He comes in and gives money out. Then you get a black candidate coming along asking for money. But, you know, I've made it a policy of mine, you know, just to run my campaign the best way I can. If I have to sell a kid, a dog, or eggs or something, but I don't go around asking for handouts. You can't do it. And the white just come along giving it out. Then you go along asking. Go to the church and speak. And maybe a couple of white candidates been there and give $20 a piece. Then you want to get up and raise the altar.
How James Meredith's political efforts perceived in the black community?
Do I have to?
Let me cut it off.
Would you have been able to predict what was going to happen with the massive immigration in 1970? I mean, would you have seen what that could have come about without having the whole state going to hell on a handcart?
No, I could not. Frankly speaking, when I was in graduate school in the mid and late 50s at Michigan State, my prediction was that this thing was 30 years away. And we were at a stage less than 10 years, what I predicted it would be 30 years before we would get there. Because you know, I knew the hostility in Mississippi, and I knew what they, you know.
So what do you attribute that? The rapidity of change and the acceptance of it.
Well, it was strictly force, spell government. That's, you know.
There's been no basic attitude change?
It had not at that time.
Not at that time.
No, sir. That's why you have all your private schools in the state now. If we had to go back through the same thing again, we would not have the private schools that we had, that we have now. When I first came to this legislature, I introduced laws that would create local committees to local boards, advisory boards. And these boards would in turn, you know, be required by law to work out a plan that would be suitable for that school district. But they wouldn't hear me. And many instances, like in our area, where the fellow courts came in and we thought it was the white folks' plan. White folks thought it was our plan. So after white folk went to private schools, then we finally got together. And say, you know, you white folk ran from this, and this is y'all's plane. What the hell you mean our plan? Y'all developed this plan. Y'all gave it to them. No, we didn't give it to them. We found out it was a plan that they had come down and stayed a half a day and developed and said, here, this is the plan for Holmes County. Well, now if we had to go back through the same thing again, whites would realize, but they had no way of knowing that they would have to sit down across the table, look blacks in the face, and deal with their problems on a community level. And if we had to go back through the same thing again, we would not have so much massive leaving schools as we had before.
How do blacks and whites relate in political matters now in Holmes County?
There are extremes on both ends. There are whites who, you know, do not deal with blacks. There are blacks who do not deal with whites. Then there is a major portion of the white political structure that thrives because of their association with blacks. And some of those officials are accepted by the black community. And if Dr. Martin Luther King were to come back, he could not beat some of those officials. Even if I were to run against some of them, I could not beat them. Those folk are my strongest supporters, but also they are strong supporters of some white, you know, officials also. And this is in some of your strongest black areas. Now, this is where I talked about a few minutes ago, earlier, when I said political immaturity. I didn't mean to, I'm not degrading the black community. Now, I want you to understand me, because we're new in this thing. But what happened when those white politicians, they had not been in politics before. You had the old diehards, the old mean boys there. All right. Then you had the real radicals, SNCC kind of black folk. All right, then here comes this liberal white man. He sees a gold mine in the black vote. And then here he comes in and cater to the black community. I'm talking about 7 years ago. He came in when things was, you know, just coming out of the hot days. And he grabbed them. And